Okay, here we go. Friday afternoon deploy is copied and pasted from Stack Overflow by the team at Lofty Labs.
Well, this is episode 4, I believe. Is that correct? We're recording it early, so episode 3 actually hasn't landed.
We're recording it.
This time, yeah. Episode 3 hasn't landed yet because for us, it is Thanksgiving week. Hmm. So we're kind of kicking one out early for the holidays. And So I haven't heard the third episode because I wasn't here. I was traveling.
It's great.
Is it good?
It's...
So I've got Alan Fraley on my left. I got Tyrell Dennison on my right. I have Ben Davis, like 70 degrees off my starboard.
Loitering in as the corner.
Your 1 o'clock?
Yeah. Your 1:30. She's about my 1:45.
I did a deep dive on starboard. You know, stern, starboard versus like port, and
I really actually don't know. Is that starboard?
That's starboard.
I thought it might have been, but
I
wasn't confident.
We can certainly say that I'm on deck.
Yeah,
starboard.
Yes,
starboard.
You're on the starboard. You're on the starboard bow.
Aftmost deck.
Starboard's right. Port's left. Bow is front. Stern's back.
Yep. Upper aft deck.
There you go.
It goes back to like the days when before wind power, and you had to. You had the galley, basically. And so most people were right-handed. And so the stern side, I forget it's an old English, comes from the old English as a term for that's basically the steering side that would be. And then the port side, of course, since your oars would be over the right side, right? Port side would be left side there.
Got it.
So I guess every time they had to turn around, they just turned left. Because you would apply stronger strokes to the right side, and that's why they did it. Most people are right-handed, so you could turn the boat easier, I guess, that way.
You can have right-handed people facing the opposite direction on the left side and paddling backward, but then you might flip it over. I don't know. It's been a while since I've personally rowed like a 100-bench rowboat, but I do have experience on a canoe, and I've flipped those over every time we get like counter paddling.
Well, that's the Bud Light.
That happens too. And there's 2 iPhone 4s, a set of car keys, and a wallet with all of my money at the bottom of Lake Weddington. If anyone wants to go get it.
Is it in a Ziploc baggie?
No, that's loose.
You got to Ziploc that stuff.
The canoe had dry bags mounted into it, and the canoe flips, and I don't think a whole lot about it. I'm just like, this sucks because I'm soaked and stuff, but get it all pulled up and get it up on the shore and unzip the dry bag. And there's like 2 bottles of hand lotion and like a $2 pair of sunglasses. And I'm like, wait, what about the keys and the phones? And then the passenger was like, oh, I just had those sitting in the bottom of the boat.
When you say all of your money, I'm picturing kind of a Ron Swanson scenario where you had gold bars. Like you didn't want to leave them at home.
And they insisted that's why the boat capsized. Because of all the gold I had on the starboard side. But all my credit cards. I probably didn't have any cash. It was majorly inconvenient. I had to like hitchhike back. It's like 30 miles out there to get a spare key. I had to break into my house because my house key was at the bottom of the lake. It's all still there though. It's been there for like 3 years. Cody tried to. He made fun of me by photoshopping a Strava. I was big into Strava at the time with cycling, and so he photoshopped a Strava kayaking ride that had my current location in the middle of Lake Weddington. Like, fuck you, man. Well, speaking of the outdoors, we've got an update because this is what I did here. Is that on the last episode we talked? We heard about your no deer situation, Tyrell.
Yeah.
But I've come to understand that we have closure now.
We do, and I'm sure anybody listening that's tired of outdoor talk is like, oh God, not again. But this is actually, what's fun is this will actually get tech-centric because it's going to kind of take an interesting turn. But yeah, I got a deer Monday night. But what's funny about that, in in the modern era, when we have cell phone service everywhere and you've got guns that can shoot from very far away, you don't have to be completely still when you're hunting with a big rifle. And so I got dropped off at my deer stand, and like 10 minutes in, I'm just like, oh, I can use this opportunity to write up some of those technical talks about debugging in Docker containers using VS Code and having that, like being able to step into breakpoints. So I'm on my phone writing up technical docs about the process of like how to get it set and configured.
Writing Markdown into Confluence.
Exactly. Markdown into Confluence on my phone with a WinMag 300 on a tripod in front of me.
And you got dropped off by an Uber, right?
Not quite. We're not quite there yet. The Uber drivers don't know all the good deer hunting spots. But I'm doing that, and I look up, and I see a doe go by at about 200 yards, which with the gun I had would totally work. But I was like, I don't want to shoot at the first deer I see. I'm going to wait. Because if I'm already seeing deer, I'm feeling pretty good. And my buddy who had dropped me off had told me, if you see any action, text me. Let me know what's going on. I'm like, okay. So I pick up my phone and I start texting him to tell him I just saw a doe go by and I didn't shoot at it. Hopefully I don't regret that. And I look again and I see like the flash of some antlers. And I'm like, oh, that's a buck. And so I get the gun swung over and like aimed at him. And he's got his head down, so I can't like get a good idea of what kind of rack he's got on him. And take the shot, boom, knock him down. And I'm super excited. Communication continues with my friend because he heard the gunshot. And he's like, send me pictures. So I'm like texting him pictures of the deer I shot because he's an avid hunter. So he's really excited. So he's just like, set the timer on your phone so that you can get a picture with you in there for scale. And I sent one. It was a terrible picture. Like, you couldn't see my head. It was like mostly the ground. And I texted it to him. I was like, I'm really bad at this. And then on top of that, I had to download an app to check in my deer after that. So I'm like in the deer woods downloading an app from Arkansas Game and Fish Commission.
You save your Confluence document.
Right. I saved my Confluence document. I saved that prior to taking a look at that doe.
Smart.
So I'd saved my work there, thankfully. And then I'm sending pictures and I'm downloading an app and I'm checking it in. And I go through that whole process. I'm kind of done. I was like, okay, well, my hunting's kind of over for the day. So then I have a video that I can watch. That's related to some client work that I'm doing that's been sent to me. So I put my headphones in and then I'm watching this video of like a tutorial that's related to the client work I'm doing.
You're watching someone Twitch stream Docker builds.
Basically. And so I'm like in the deer woods just listening to this and watching. And then what's funny is at that point I'm not going to hunt anymore, but I'm watching deer because there's still deer activity. So I'm simultaneously like watching and listening to this like deploy video and like watching the deer around and all of this. So it was just like the most surreal modern hunting experience imaginable. Thankfully, it wasn't at one of those like high fence hunting places where they just walk a deer out in front of you and they're just like, please just don't shoot me when you hit the deer. Like, this is an actual hunting. This was like not a like a cultivated place. And I wasn't hunting over bait or anything. But it was pretty funny that I'm just like texting, writing tech docs, watching videos, all in the midst of this deer hunt where I got like unquestionably one of the prettiest bucks I've seen, or like biggest bucks, like awesome rack and everything. So I'm going to actually have that guy mounted and it's getting tested for chronic wasting disease. So hopefully I'll have a freezer full of delicious deer meat, some summer sausage. It'll be awesome.
And so I had no idea that there was an app for this, but honestly, I'm not surprised. Why? Of course there is, right?
Well, what's funny is I didn't know either until Clay was just like, well, you can call them or you can download the app. And so I was like, okay. And I downloaded the app's got offload functionality. So they're like, if you've got the app, but you can't submit cause you're like way deep into the deer woods, you can put it in and it'll hold it. And then when it gets signal again, it'll upload it. And it'll save it so that if you're offline and the game warden comes up and you're just like, no, I tried, but I don't have phone signal. He's not like, oh, whatever.
It's awesome that this exists because like there's an API behind that somewhere.
Yeah.
And there's REST endpoints. It's like slash API slash, like deer tag. I don't know what the technical term is for it.
Technically, it's checking in your deer. Kind of like checking. Who was it? I think it was Jesse.
Jesse.
Yeah. Like Foursquare?
He's like, wait, are you telling me there's like Foursquare for deer? And I was like, dude, Tyrell is totally the mayor of that deer.
I am the mayor of that deer.
Man, that's crazy. I'm not surprised. Alan, I don't know if you're like a regular hunter these days. You've hunted in the past. Did you have internet access? Were you writing technical docs while you were out there?
At that point in my life, I was not.
Because this is a new thing, right?
Absolutely. Like,
but yeah, that's amazing. The world we live in now. I'm totally not surprised by it either. I'm just a little jealous we didn't get that gig to get to build that API
for the state of Arkansas.
It's going to come up for renewal. We'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, totally.
We're going to watch for
yeah.
that.
That's probably
a bid on it.
$2.5 million a year contract.
Yeah, to build that API. Did it work well?
Oh, yeah, worked fine.
You know, most of Arkansas.
I did have an issue where I signed in and it was just like, sign in. And I'm just like, I think I just did that. And it's just like, sign in. And it's like, no, really, though. I'm pretty sure I'm signed in. So I had to close the app and reopen it. And then sure enough, I was signed in. So
yeah,
it's reminiscent to me.
Sounds like government apps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing that was kind of like the next evolution of travel days. Like nobody used to work on travel days. And now not everybody expects this. So some people do it. Some people expect it. But like the opportunity to work on a travel day is there if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember I was really excited the first time I pushed deployed some code from an airplane. I was like,
yep.
That's amazing.
I see Ben in the corner and then as head of operations, Lovey's like, fuck yeah, we can bill on travel days.
Well, it's troublesome because I'm like, yes. But I find it personally just truly hellish. I don't want to work on travel. I maintain communication.
Yeah.
But I'm like answering emails and that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the novelty wore off the moment I realized, like, because at first it was just like, look what I can do. And they're just like, great, I'm glad I did that. I never want to do that again now. No, I just want to sit and watch one of the Batman movies.
But see, now that you've told me this, next year, right, when hunting season rolls around and you're like, hey, I'm going to take a vacation day to go to the deer woods. But hey, man, just do it as a work from home day. Just, you know, build some hours while you're out there. You're writing those technical docs.
Here's the hot spot.
WDW.
We'll pay for the cell service.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'll take my laptop and have it in my lap in the tree stand.
I don't know how it works with the IRS, but we might be able to cover having the deer processed. So, I don't know. How's that work, Ben?
I'm going to have to do a little more research, pulling our CPA.
We'll call the accountant promptly. Everything has an app, so I'm not surprised that that exists. I know that you can use an app, I think that you can use an app for like getting a fishing license and things like that.
I think if you were to allow us to mount the head of that animal in the lobby, it could be fully deductible. The processing could be.
And you like, yeah. And you like bring the jerky into the office as well.
And then that's half deductible.
No fewer than 1/3 of the jerky produced must be consumed on premises.
We can make this happen.
Meals are only half deductible unless they're a cost of goods sold. So if we sell the jerky, we can make it fully deductible.
Have a little mini fridge when clients come in.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we get in trouble selling deer jerky.
You think so?
I think so.
There's some scale at which...
Yeah. There's got to be a scale on
you that. Because you can certainly sell stuff at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
But like there is definitely like a level at which you are regulated and you need a co-packer to help you navigate all that.
So you just
got to put a nutrition facts label on it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I recently came into the possession of some Amish produced home jalapeno jelly, and that you know it has nutrition facts. I don't know how those were derived.
That's a co-packer,
but
that's what they do.
It sure looks like the label was printed on someone's inkjet printer from 1994.
Whatever the equivalent to like LegalZoom.com is for like Nutrition Zoom.
It's pretty rough.
Yeah, it's like just put the ingredients in.
And it's in Comic Sans.
That was it.
Gestures for a bottle opener.
I do need the bottle opener.
Yep.
I wanted to give you my beer cap too.
Make sure you capture that on the mic.
I've got a cap. already. I want to get rid of that. I don't know.
Oh, okay. You don't need another one.
Unless you know a way to open a beer bottle with a beer cap.
Sometimes my mind's stuck in Fallout 4 and I'm just like,
he was just trying to,
trying to tip you.
Here's some money.
Yeah. He's trying to MacGyver.
There's a new
over
Fallout
there.
Coming out. Isn't it?
76.
It's already out.
Is it an MMO? Is that what it is?
It's totally MMO. So not for me.
So someone, I read about that and then it was like Bethesda's first MMO. And I was like, wait, is that really true though? Because you have The Elder Scrolls Online, but I guess that's not made
that's
by
not,
Bethesda.
Bethesda's name is on
it. They produced it, but they didn't develop it.
Yeah.
So Fallout 76 is apparently developed by Bethesda.
I forget the company that put it out, but I imagine basically they had to, you know, pay some money to Bethesda to be able to make a,
it or use it,
yeah,
you know,
make an Elder Scrolls game.
It's like the Call of Duty ones. They have two different studios that make them, Treyarch, and I forget what the other one is. Mm-hmm. But I just saw some nerds like really raving about it. Well, not like raving about it in a good way, but on Reddit being like, oh, it's Bethesda's first MMO. It's going to be awful. Of course, these people aren't engineers, I don't think. So,
is the Call of Duty thing, is that deal pressure element? Is that a crowbar or is it?
Well, they release them like yearly.
They have to have people working concurrently.
I think so. I think it's so that they, it's basically, there's a 2-year development cycle and a 1-year release cycle. And so they've just got
Marvel films produced by James Patterson.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
every month.
So I don't know. Maybe it's kind of like, I guess, kind of like the first model year run of a car. You can be pretty sure that it's going to be kind of awful. That's the general consensus. Maybe that's the same way with game studios.
I've heard and read, and like I said, so disclaimer, I have not played it firsthand, but I've heard it's very sparse even for like,
for an MMO.
And the other thing is,
do you mean sparse by like, player size right now?
Not a lot to do. So it's like,
okay, got it. Yeah.
It's like WoW when WoW first started. So the other thing is, the only humans in the game are other players. So there's no raiders for you to
you have no like humanoid NPCs.
Right.
Got it.
So a lot of it I've heard is just like farming Brahma hides to get the thing.
And you're
that
just
you
like
want.
Running around killing Mirelurks and that's it.
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised that Jesse surfaced?
No, here's Jesse. Yeah, man, he's got things to say about
this
it.
Yeah. Perfect opportunity because I'm taking my French leave, and so
it's not a French leave if you tell us that you're doing it.
It's poorly executed. happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
All right. I don't know. I'm thinking about. I remember I played like one MMO at launch, which was Star Wars Galaxies. Mm. So this goes back a little bit.
Yeah.
Pre WoW, and it was. Oops, excuse me. Pretty abysmal, kind of like the sound my mic stand just made.
Everybody grabbed the springs on their mic stand.
So yeah, it was pretty awful at launch day. Like servers crashed, things went down, and I'm sure that there was some shit going down at the offices of the people maintaining those servers. And this reminds me of what happened this week, and I won't name names, but we had some panic debugging this week. And it got me thinking a lot of days that I've spent. I call it like the war room days, you know.
Yeah.
Where the app's down, the deployment's failed, there's some sort of crisis, and it eats up a day or more. You're sleeping under your desk or what have you to like get through a situation. And that happens a lot.
And it shuts everything down.
Yeah.
Like just because it goes into like all hands on deck, and then after it's done, everyone's recovering. And
yeah, you've got downtime afterward for people to recover, but like also one of the biggest problems, and we talked a lot about it because like we're all guilty of it, and like saw it on our team and other members of our partner's team and things like that. But like there's what I call it panic mode debugging, which is just like. I mean, it's natural response, right? This is panic. This is what panic does.
Yeah.
This
bug is trying to kill us right now.
Exactly.
Right? Let's squash it.
The brain starts going into survival mode, essentially, absolutely. And it just happens to be doing it in your IDE. And like, yeah, suddenly, what did Chris say the other day? When you have a hammer, everything looks like a thumb.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And I thought about it. I was like, I've seen a lot of it happens, but you can get better at it, right? Like you can have enough war room days that you learn to test assumptions.
Kind of, you develop your emotional intelligence, and you know, it's helpful to recognize the panic. And I think unfortunately, we get better at that with more experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Because like you learn to take the punches.
Yeah, you have to be able to be comfortable in the heat. Because otherwise, you just start looking for the foreign contagion.
Oh, man.
You're just like, what is different in this situation? And it can have literally no relevance to the situation.
Just
but you're
looking
like,
for like a signal that stands out.
This thing is different, exactly.
Looking
and
for
so
smoke,
therefore,
right?
It is obviously the symptom.
Just the root of the classic red herring, right?
You just
chase something down the rabbit hole because like, I see something that's unexpected. And we have a problem and there's an unexpected thing and like hours of time and emotion and people's souls get crushed through the experience of just like what I think of as just basically firing a gun into every corner of a dark room, you know?
well said.
I'm imagining right now, I'm picturing like whenever, you know, if you're the one too that has discovered this bug, that feeling that comes over you, like, you know, it's like a sci-fi movie or something where you're on a space station, you're the one on duty and like an anomaly pops up. And so your face gets red a little bit. You feel it in your cheeks and like
getting like a fight or flight response,
getting
you know?
Tingle. Like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? Yeah. You know, oh man. And then,
I got the tingle, but it was actually just my phone vibrating in my pocket because pager duty was calling me.
for me, the way it manifests, and thankfully the way I can kind of catch it most of the time, is I'll immediately go, if I don't, most of the time the panic comes when it's just like, I don't understand the information presented to me.
Totally.
So the easiest way to resolve that is I'm just going to paste that into Google. And then if I get a Stack Overflow hit immediately, I'm just like, okay. And I click and I read and I'm just like, that seems about right. And then I go, what about this? And then I don't take the time to read it thoroughly.
Right.
Yeah. Because I think, I've just found the solution fast. Here we go, guys.
Well,
and then I take a moment and I read it and I'm just like, and then at that point it washes over me like, that was dumb. That has no bearing on this situation. And then I'll go, never mind. I'm flailing. Give me a minute to think. And that's kind of my like,
so you,
system
you like,
of recognizing you have I've, to, I've, I panicked.
You have to I've flinch gone. One time and then you recognize like, oh, nope, that was knee jerk.
Yeah,
I just saw myself do it.
Yep.
And now, yeah.
Yeah.
I like to, I mean, like one of the most important things about debugging anything, whether it's like a crisis situation like that or you're just debugging while developing, is testing your assumptions, right? Because what happens when you start chasing red herrings is you made an assumption. You did not test the assumption. You simply like took it at face value, the assumption, and you went after it. And in a team-based environment, when everybody's panicking, you get like this groupthink, right? So you go into Slack and be like, hey, here's something unexpected. And then like eight people independently are like, I'm chasing that too, you know, saddle up, let's go. And then you can't correct it once you realize.
You also have to be comfortable being the person not making noise in that moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's easy to think, okay, everyone else is talking. I have to contribute or I'm going to look unengaged or I'm going to look like I don't know what I'm doing. Imposter syndrome will kick in and you feel like, oh, I got to do something here. Even though I barely know what's going on. And that's another one of those moments where you just have to be comfortable just like sitting and letting it ride.
Yep.
And like learning, reading, thinking, do all of that and just be chill. Like,
yeah,
bring it down. And that'll produce the best results.
And this is kind of morbid, but okay. I mean, yeah, it's very morbid the more I think about it. But it is kind of a way to look at it is like, you know, I try and get people not to panic because the app is already down, right? It's already crashed. So this whole like time box pressure of like solve it right now is kind of false. I'm sure the business can put pressure and say, hey, we're losing money right now or whatever. But the reality is that like you can't save it from what's happened. It's already happened. It's like as if, you know, there's the bandits have tied someone to the railroad tracks. And then the train just blew through them and you're like, we got to do something. It's too late now. It'd be one thing if you saw the train coming and it was like, we got to do something quick. But like, it's already over. You might as well take your time to kind of plan your next step and be like, how do we make sure that doesn't happen again? You know?
Yeah. Because you can't go back in time. But I like what you mentioned, Tyrell, about like Googling it and then finding, you know, something on Stack Overflow and posting that, you know, in Slack or whatever. The bright side of that is it is a solution. and you don't read over it very extensively, but you can kind of get, you know, four different people reading over it at the same time, kind of parallelize.
Yep. Yeah.
On that peril. Yes. You don't want to paralyze in that situation.
No. We got four people together so we could all be paralyzed.
Paralyzed with fear.
Simultaneously.
Yeah. Well, I'll just stare at Slack waiting for somebody to post.
Well, I mean, that's an important thing, right? Is like getting into a mindset where you can share some information of like, this could be a problem, but first you've got to set the tempo and the mood of the room such that people can hear that without taking that assumption and running with it, right? Because you want to be able to say like, hey, here's possibly something, and put that in front of people to help you test your assumptions and vet it. But what you don't want to do is set, you know, the rest of the room chasing that down. So you want that kind of feedback, right? But that feedback is not useful. Putting that in front of people isn't useful if you're still in panic mode. So like for me, step one is like, everybody calm down.
Yep.
App's already down. We got to figure out a solution. Here's a possibility. Let's not spend too much time on that. Here's an assumption. It's like the scientific method. Here's the hypothesis. Yep. Now let's prove it wrong quickly. Right.
And then
move on. And if we can't prove it wrong, then hey, maybe that's it. But it helps to have a team and people split up on it. But that you know, anyone that just if you don't put it in front of people, you're more likely to chase down something that, you know, you need people to help you confirm it.
Yeah, exactly. Or confirm it's either valid or invalid. And you know, in those situations there's like always kind of a checklist to go through, you know, like because at first you have an emotional reaction, and then if you kind of step back and you have an intelligent reaction of like, well, what has changed? And when did it change? Like, when did this last work right? And what has changed? When did that change? Those are the two most important ones I can think of.
For sure. Well, and then some people can change the environment of a debugging session. Like, I remember specifically, I had a director years ago that would heat up a room. When stuff happened, you would physically feel the stress and heat like radiate off of him, to where very few people could be in a room with him while he was debugging a situation.
And he was saying like he was actually debugging. Like, I've had people that would like pressure cook a room, but they usually weren't engineers.
No, this was our director, and he would pressure cook a room while he was working. And like no one in the business could like be proximate to him in those moments. And like our network admin could like kind of do it, but he was just like, nah, I don't want anything to do with that. And so like I was literally one of the only people who could be in the room and like actively problem solve with him. And it did well for me as far as like job security and learning just how to be calm in that moment. But yeah, like people just he like felt it from miles around. And it wasn't until I was able to just stand in there and distance myself from his emotion and energy. And
so
none of what I feel is targeted towards me. So I can't personalize this chaos and bring it in and like let it screw up how I am contributing or how
I guess I have a question, which is like, is that because like was the process good? Was the debugging good, or was it like you had to kind of power through it? Like that heat, that pressure that he was putting on, was it because he was just like solving the problem so intensely, or was it like chaos? Was it like
no, it wasn't
ripping
chaos.
Out wires and screaming?
No,
and,
he was very good at it.
But when he did it, it
was intense. Like he was super smart guy and ran a very complex IT department and system, but it was like that whole process just because of the way he was wired when he did it. Man, you felt it, and he just was just radiating negative energy, and but I learned a lot from watching him troubleshoot. So it was and learned what not to do. So
yeah,
it was good for me to kind of be in the midst of that and kind of take the good, leave the bad, and progress as a professional.
I feel like these moments are, for me, they're really important. Like, obviously, I don't want to go through a crisis on a regular basis. But if I go long enough without one, I do start to get a little nostalgic for it. Ben and I were talking about traveling the other day and like having like really bad travel arrangements or just like a difficult travel, you know, like flying to a place. So he had just done some international travel and it was like, give me a month, give me 2 months. I won't remember that part of it. And all of my entire experience will be great. And that's how those war room days are. It's awful in the moment, but I can look back on it and be like, oh, I grew and like we bonded and like we solved these problems. And, there's like one time that sticks out for me as this like ultimate war room moment. It was like a, I don't know, it was like a 28 hour long ordeal. And it came to me because we had a couple crises like recently. We had this one earlier this week. You had kind of one, Alan, Friday last week on that system went down. Ended up not being our thing, but the disc had gone into like a read-only mode.
Sorry, I blocked that out.
Compartmentalizing
is very important
to the
whole process.
Exactly, And you're still too close to it that you still had it in quarantine. But I helped you unlock that file. But
memory suppression.
Yeah, and so like I was traveling as well. I was out of the office and I kind of saw in Slack like some back and forth debugging of like, hey, what happened here? Here's some things we could do. And I almost like sent you a direct message of like, because the hard drive had gone into read only mode, and you had said something along the lines of like, well, we can reboot the host, and I saw it, and it had been like 30 minutes, so I didn't know if it was too late or what, but I wanted to be like, Alan, don't do it, don't reboot that host. But then I looked at the clock and I was like, shit, they're recording the podcast. I'm going to interrupt him right in the middle of it and throw him off his chill. So I didn't do it. I didn't say it, and everything ended up working out fine. And
I didn't reboot the host.
And so I didn't know what it was, but one of the things I know from this is like learned it from an experience is this was back in the day when you went to your boss and said, hey, we're going to stand up a web application and we need a web server. And he was like, okay. And he turned around and he reached in the drawer and he got the Dell catalog out on the table and was like, how many of the RAMs do you want? You know? And so we had our own hardware and like we knew it intimately, you know, like I got with all the servers were named and they had their little quirks and stuff. And our web stack, it was a Django stack. This is in the newspaper industry. They were all named after, you know, because Django is named after Django Reinhardt, the gypsy jazz guitarist. So we had Duke, Ella, and Miles were our servers, other jazz references. And we were running Ellington, which was the newspaper CMS that eventually like got open sourced and became Django. So that's where that all came from. But so we knew these servers well. And like one day the media server, I think that was Miles, went read only. Someone went, same symptom you guys saw on that other app.
Yep.
Someone tried to upload a file through a web form where we accept file uploads and got an error. And then upon investigation, the file system was read only, and I wasn't in the office yet, and the only other developer in that entire organization saw it and was like, that's weird. I'm just going to restart that machine. And what had happened was we had a hard drive failure in the, I guess we had like, it wasn't NAS storage, but like a big SAN array. And I forget, I think it was like RAID 10. I'm not a hardware guy. So someone's going to be like, they didn't have RAID 10 on their NAS or whatever, but you know what I mean? It was RAID something and I don't remember which, but I know that like it went into read only over a drive failure and it was striped and mirrored. You could just slap another drive into it and it would copy data over to it and it would self recover. The problem is that when you restarted the host though, it would not boot when the hard drive was in that state. And so the machine didn't come back up and we lost every asset that newspaper holding company owned. We had probably, we didn't, I mean, we had an outage upon
okay.
it. In
like,
theory, well, we didn't know, right? We didn't know because the machine didn't boot back up and we couldn't like actually inspect the hard disk. So actually for a good while, maybe we lost it all. What we definitely had was an outage across everything. All static media, so no JavaScript, no CSS. All images for 20 different newspapers, 15 daily blogs. All the weekly newspapers up here in Northwest Arkansas were all on that. We lost it. It all came crashing down. And like bad architecture, we found out across all these properties where like page, like you couldn't even get a page that like the back end was up and running. But you couldn't even get a page because there was so much like dependent JavaScript and CSS. Like it just wouldn't even render and like page wouldn't load. So we had this huge crisis And it was like 28 hours. And like we kind of split up into teams. I was working with the IT department on like triaging. Someone was trying to fix the hardware. And like what ended up happening was like we had a support agreement with Dell where we had like a 4-hour turnaround, and someone was in a car driving from Dallas with a hard drive in it to bring to us to slap into the array. And meanwhile, we're trying to get like our sites back online. So we had tape backup. We're like rolling backups off of tape onto a different machine. We didn't have a machine with enough storage to hold all the stuff that we had. So that's, you can hear the tape backups firing right now. And so we're basically just trying to triage the site, finding the oldest version of the static assets that we could find. We were like going through every template of all the different websites and cutting down their dependence on static assets, and basically like one by one standing every site up without any CSS or JavaScript, but at least getting it working. Mm. We're like finding like CSS from 6 months ago in the backup and like putting it all in line and letting the backend deliver it, like site by site for about 30 applications. And it was 20 something hours straight. We were sleeping at our desks and just like, it was awful. But afterward, like especially like when the sleep deprivation kicked in, it was like a euphoric state. I'm not going to compare it to your ultra running, okay? But I'm going to compare the mechanism as being similar.
Yeah, it's pretty similar in that regard.
Like, I don't think it's nearly to the extreme, but it's something about the brain just being like, this is more than I can handle. Here's some like rainbows and puppies and unicorns. Yeah. See if that chills you out a little bit, you know? But yeah, so I lived through that experience and I was like, Alan, don't restart that machine.
Yeah, and everything I was reading, you know, kind of back to find an error message, first of all, don't panic. And if you don't know what it means, paste that into Google. And so that's what I had done. And so I'm on the Stack Overflow and I'm looking and I'm reading like, okay, so if the Linux kernel fails to mount the hard drive basically and puts it into read-only mode, it's a hardware failure more than likely. And, you know, and all the solutions I was reading are like, oh yeah, I just rolled it back. I rolled back my kernel version and it was fine. And I'm like, well, I can't do that. So yeah. I'm not going to turn it off. And so I forget the command exactly, but I went in there and found a way to print out the kernel logs and was able to confirm that, yes, it had seen a hardware error and failed to mount the hard drive. But yeah, I guess the sysadmin fixed it, so that was good.
I'm not going to name names, but it wasn't in the cloud, not the big cloud. No, it was in someone's cloud, but it was
someone's,
you know,
little cloud.
Yeah, it was a mini cloud. Yeah,
it's, yeah. So that, you know,
I assume it was. It's they positioned themselves as a real company, but I think it's just running on one of those little Western Digital MyCloud, like a stack of SATA drives.
There's something reassuring about using AWS, you know, because I mean, Amazon
I was gonna say we don't have these problems, but yeah, like we as an industry have these problems. They still happen. It's just
totally,
we as engineers no longer have to be concerned with it because there, I mean, the light still blinks and someone still slaps a drive into it. It's just handled for you.
And
you
so know? It's fun whenever you get the you get that email from a client who's like, oh, I just got an email from AWS and they're gonna like rotate our server. Is this, what does this mean? You're like, that's fine.
That means we're not gonna get woken up on Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good thing. Okay.
I remember making the shift mentally with a company I was with because we had our local network with all our servers on it, and we actually had named ours after the planets of the solar system. So we had Mars, Earth, Venus, so on and so forth.
And then you had to throw Jupiter. You had to throw Pluto in the garbage.
We destroyed Jupiter when that happened. But when I came in, and they were just like, "Hey, we need you to build our e-commerce system," I was like, "Ah, cool. Let's not have it in house." Like, what? And I got them to give me a Rackspace server. And so I had a full Rackspace server, needless to say, it was not named. It's like, no, it does not get a name. Mm-mm. It is not in our server room with the emergency, like fire fire deploy system. Do you guys have that in your server room?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget exactly how it works, but like either a gas or a powder that essentially just takes all of the oxygen
and
out of the room.
And will absolutely kill you.
Yes.
And they're just like, if you're ever in this room and this starts to beep, you go mash that button and you never leave it until someone comes to get you or you die. And you just stand there with that button held.
Yeah, it will it's asphyxiate like an override. You.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, this is legit in here. And
of course, never trained us on it. I knew that we had it and I knew where the button was, but no one ever told me to stand right there by the button or you'll die.
Yeah, see, I got the push this in and do not move until someone comes to get you or you die talk. I was just like, what if it's a really long time?
What if it's 28 hours and the guy from Dell's got the hard drive in his car?
Yeah. Thankfully, I'm pretty sure everybody's phone would have blown up at that point with this system.
I kind of miss these, like, server room days for other reasons. Maybe it was just, like, the IT guys that set up the environment that we had at that particular place I mentioned. But, like, the IT department and the server room were one.
Yeah.
Because at some point, it was just, like, a Mac G3 sitting in the corner, and that was a server room. And then, like, shit started happening and we needed systems and they started like putting in racks and really getting a server room. And so they're like, they had to put in, proper AC to like cool these things as it was getting bigger. And then like at some point, like the IT guys were like, hey, that shit's really cold and really loud. We should build a wall between our desks and these servers. And so they enclosed the server room. And they're like, look, we enclosed the server room. And we have all these pieces left, and we did it ourselves. It was cool. They had, like, plexiglass windows and stuff, except that I found out when I started there, I didn't work in IT. I worked in advertising, but they put me in the IT department at a desk right by the window looking in the server room, which was cool enough for me, I guess. Problem was that there was this air vent, like, maybe 2 feet behind me that blasted nothing but 40-degree air out of it. Because no one thought to check every single vent that went to the servers, and they built a wall between one of the main air vents and the server room. And nice. Then they put my desk. It was like it was a. I found out later this had been there for years, and it was just a hazing technique they used for the new guy. It's like, oh, you get to sit in the cool desk. Nice. You've got the cool spot over there. And then I found out what that really meant. I don't know. It was fun though. It was fun being in that world, and like it was kind of nice of like knowing your hardware very well because like you slid it into the rack, and you didn't have. I sound like an old man getting like all nostalgic, but it was kind of there. It was terrible at the time, but I can look back on it nostalgically. It's like, oh, we messed up the machine. We need to wipe it and start over. I'll get my Ubuntu 6 disk out of the sleeve and go into the server room.
I remember, a USB, a bootable USB being like, top notch.
Changed everything. Yeah.
It was great. The light boot. Oh, man.
At my last job, I worked for a very large communications company. We'll say that. And at my last job, I was there for the transition period between walk this CD from machine to machine to machine to machine to just like, just plug it in and the system will just take care. Just put a network cable in it and it'll get imaged. Yep. It just knows what's going on there and fix it.
These were the IT dark ages.
Yeah. And to what you were saying too about the network center, we at one point moved our base of operations to a different building, and the building was established and had gone into some amount of disuse. So there was an entire mod, they called it, that was built and wired and ready, but unoccupied and had been for some time. The network operations center was directly below us, and we had this great slanted window that you could look down into the dark knock and watch all of the lights flash while those 10 people sat there ignoring everything else going on around them. But when we started expanding
the observation deck.
Yeah.
Watch the nerds. Do not feed them or tap on the glass.
But when we started filling out the room, we came to the realization that only half of the floor space was actually wired for cubicles, and we needed to get more of that unused space up and operational. Network guy comes up and hits the closet where all of the wiring converges on the system of boxes. He's got a key that he gets in there with, and he closes the door behind him, and you can hear the door latch. And then there's just a couple of minutes of clanging, and then you just hear him go, oh, God damn it. And he comes out of there, and he leaves the door open as he storms off. And where I sat at the command center was directly in front of that door. So all I had to do was do a 180 and just kind of look. We'd never been in there before. It was locked by a key. And I look in and it's You've seen pictures on the internet of all of the cabling that's like tied together and color coordinated.
Oh, I'm a big fan of nice cable management.
It is the exact opposite of that.
That's what a server room actually looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, that's the ones that haven't been in a picture. Yeah.
The pictures that you see in like CIO Review magazine or whatever, where like the server room has like overhead cable trays and like ultraviolet light and stuff like that, and they look really rad, like something out of Tron. That's like the equivalent of like airbrushed Instagram photos of what actually happens in a server room.
They do exist. But it's you know, you have to have money for that to happen.
I do remember buying rack servers. Like, we didn't have the overhead.
We had a little bit, I guess. We did that at a financial institution
I worked for. I do remember I spec'd out a machine for that stack, and I brought it to the network director, and I was like, hey, what do you think of this machine? Pretty good, right? And he's like, yeah, get the cable management arm. And I was like, what, it's like a $50, what is that even? And it was like, it was at the back of the rack where the machine slid in, and then the machine was on like, I don't know, like drawer pulls almost, I guess. Mm. Like, so you could pull it out from the front and slide it out, and the cable management arm just articulated kind of like, well, I would point it out in the room, but that doesn't help our listeners. But, you know, it could extend, and it could keep the cables going directly in the back of the machine, but you could slide it in and out without the cables getting caught and then stuff. And he was like, get the cable management arm. And that was for his own sanity, because he's the one that had to wire it and stuff. But those were pretty sweet. But it's at the end of the cable management arm, at the back of the rack, it just...
Chaos.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember that. So where I'd mentioned that I had seen beautiful cabling, it was sad. It was sad but happy whenever we wired the building to fiber optic. And then those racks that you see, you know, with the Cat 5 going through it, became like one fiber optic cable
orange cable.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, well, we're not going to throw those away, you know, so you're running through those, but it's one sad little cable, one or two through there.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, what's funny is, you know, you talked about the knock, Jesse. I remember specifically with a cloud hosting, a local-ish cloud hosting company that was trying to like put a footprint in and everything. One of their main selling points was the VNOC, the virtual knock. There's like, you can watch the knock from your browser. that's like the panda cam at the zoo. Like, is there a button to click to send them pizza? Like, why do you have the VNOC?
Was their knock completely blacked out too?
Oh, of course. You can't have lights in a knock. Like, they're not allowed.
How else are you gonna see the LEDs flashing?
That's right.
Yeah, from a distance. Like, because you can sit across the room in the operations center, and someone's like, "Hey, what's that light over there?" And like, from 100 yards away, just like, I think that's channel 32 on the switch. It's fine. It usually does. It'll go. Yep. See, there it goes.
Now all I can see is the IT crowd episode where,
I know the one you're talking about. Like, yeah.
What's Neil, Noel Fielding's character on that show? The IT crowd.
See the guy that lives in the closet?
Yeah. And she finds him and is all right. Like, you know, what do you do back here?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know what these lights do.
It's going to blink in Richmond. Yeah.
Richmond in the flashing lights. Yeah. We'll post the link to that. And he's just like, this light does this. I have no idea what it means.
Do they like, is it like season two when they introduce his character? He's been in the closet. It's two or three. At least several episodes into it.
I think it was three.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's a good show. This is going to be like bold, but I wish that this podcast could be what that was for television, at least on some level of like, that was a show that is appealing for people that like work in this industry. But like anybody could watch it. Anybody could watch it and enjoy it. I don't think we're there.
That's bold.
I'm not comparing ourselves to that show.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that like That is...
Ideally, that's what you would want
I want to be that approachable. I'm not saying that good. I just mean that approachable.
Yeah.
To be clear, you guys are... Fuck you guys.
Yeah. we're as good as the IT crowd.
We don't have any writers.
I'm writing it live.
We'll do it in production.
Nice. Test in production. Exactly.
It's a great show. And this industry doesn't have nearly as much of that. Like you have, as far as like either fictional or like at least like you have a lot of like drama stuff around like the medical industry. We've had like, we've had like hospital dramas, right? And that did really well. What was like the original Noah Wiley on like ER?
Oh, yeah, that's
right?
ER, but before that was St. Elsewhere.
St. Elsewhere
was the first.
And then ER, and then you had, I don't know, there's a bunch of those, and that was like aimed at like surgeons and doctors, but it was appealing to anyone that worked in healthcare. And then they're like, let's widen that net. And then like we had the, they broadened it to like RNs. You had like Hawthorne and a bunch of other things like that. Medical industries had like a lot of different ways to like come home from work. And like you live in that world and you get some catharsis in your entertainment, you know, to be like, oh, fuck, I know that situation.
Are you saying nobody cares when a server dies?
Well, no. I'm not comparing the fields. I'm being clear here. Not comparing
there are similarities though. Yes.
I'm not comparing like the seriousness of the fields or at least like the stakes, right? I'm just saying that like there's not a whole lot of content. Because I can't switch it off. I don't go home and I'm not a software engineer.
We have anymore. NCIS Cyber. I mean, come on. What more could you want?
It's true.
No,
the two idiots, one keyboard, you know what I'm talking
closest
about?
Closest thing is... yeah.
No, that's a viral video. Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. Closest thing would be Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley is a great example.
So I have friends. I have a lot of friends who cannot watch that show.
It's too real.
Too real.
Too real.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is so stressful for them. Like they just they can't because they, you know, like
because I know these characters, but at work they're not funny.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Well, and that's one of the really fortunate things about being a developer in Northwest Arkansas is like. We're not in the midst of like the concentrated development world of Silicon Valley and San Francisco and all of that. Like we're not in the Bay Area, so we can enjoy the lampooning of that extreme version of our culture.
Because our doctor doesn't pitch us on the mobile app that he's raising capital for when we go.
Exactly.
Where's the bar that all the IT folks in Fayetteville go to? Which bar is that?
It doesn't
every
exist.
Bar,
right?
Every
exactly.
bar.
Yeah, exactly.
But like
every bar equally as much, right?
Yeah. In these concentrated professional areas, like there's the doctor bar, there's the lawyer bar,
right.
There's
yeah.
Like when you've got that you kind got, of critical mass.
Yeah, like by the courthouse, you've got all the, there was like a thing, all the federal judges and federal attorneys used to hang out at the bar on the top of the Mountain Inn. Before it was demolished, that was like known for that. That was before my time here.
And then but they always have funny names like the loophole or whatever sort of relates
the
to
loophole. Damn it! My brain did the thing. You know, we made it pretty far in before my brain did the thing where I started to say something and it just flew away. But
that happens. We'll get down the road like 2 minutes and then you'll just shout it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you'll remember it.
What we'll do is we'll record it in post and my delivery will be perfect.
They'll never know.
I remember exactly.
Oh, man. Well, you know, it's time for us to, like, get out of here and go eat some turkey. Although this is, like, this won't be timely at all. People are like, we did that a week ago.
Yeah. But, it's not time for us either.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, through the magic of recording technology, no one's eating turkey next.
Podcast magic, everyone. So, I don't know. That was a good time. We'll see you next time, you know. And until then, we don't have a slogan. I'm like, I'm working up towards a slogan. Like, and just keep it flofty.
No.
That's not the slogan.
Yeah. Happy trails to you. Every day you hustling.
Thank
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.